meeting of the Senate Education Committee, and first on our agenda is a work session on Senate Bill 38. Jen, I don't know if you want to just give us a little update and remind us of what this was. We had a hearing on this earlier, and so let's open up the work session.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 38 is one of two small schools bills that Senator Courtney had introduced, and we had some hearings on these bills, and they would cap the size of the school size rather than the classroom size, as we're used to talking about. And my understanding is that Senator Hartung has asked for this bill in Ways and Means and has spoken with Senator Courtney and has agreed that if we would send this bill to Ways and Means without recommendation, they might spend some time on it.
That's absolutely right. And what my hope is that that we may get some assistance from the federal government. I've given U.S. Senator Gordon Smith and Ron Wyden and the Secretary Rod Page our list of priorities where federal assistance might be of help in this state, with a large flat grant with lots of flexibility, and a reduction of class sizes on that list. So we'll see how we fare on that. And so that's why I would like to have the bill down Ways and Means.
Okay. Is there any questions? Or okay. The chair is ready to entertain a motion on Senate Bill 38.
Madam Chair, I am going to make that motion. I move Senate Bill 38 to Ways and Means. Do we need to do the sub or just Ways and Means?
Just Ways and
Means. Ways and Means with no recommendation.
Okay. Any comments?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just to clarify that when we last heard the bill under the fiscal impact summary, on our staff measure summary, it was indicated that may have a fiscal impact, but no statement yet issued. So as we're sending this forward to Ways and Means, are we understanding that we're sending it forward with no idea of what the fiscal impact may be, or is there new information since we last had this before us?
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, procedurally, if a bill goes to Ways and Means, we don't have to have a fiscal impact before we send it to Ways and Means, and so they just, as a matter of process, don't create one. There have been some estimates that COSA had done last year on class size in relation to the Oregon Quality Ed model, but to my knowledge, there hasn't been any wholesale effort to figure out how much this would cost.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, Senator Duckert has moved that we send Senate Bill 38 to Ways and Means without a recommendation. Any objections? Okay. So moved. And we close the work session on Senate Bill 38. Okay, next on the agenda is Senate Bill 324, and we will open up a work session on Senate Bill 324. And Jan, if you could give us an update on this one.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we last heard this bill back in January, and what this bill does is create the Professional Organization Certification Fund that would be placed within the TSPC to help defray costs for teachers and administrators seeking advanced certifications. And the kind of advanced certifications we've talked about in this committee was the National Board Certification for teachers. This doesn't appropriate any money, but it does allow them to create this fund so they can accept some donations that have been offered so far. And then they would kind of help centralize who gets these grants.
Okay. Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Given the action that we took on the last measure, which was to send it to Ways and Means with the hope that the federal government may be sending some funds our way, I'm wondering if that might also be an appropriate action for this particular bill. The thought occurs to me now as it mm-hmm. is before us, but I'm just wondering if that would be an appropriate action.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, since we have our chair of the subcommittee here with us, I'd like to hear from Senator Hartman.
Yes, let's see. I haven't read the bill, but is there any general funds in this?
No.
I think we're seeking federal funds. Is that?
Yeah. Or any funds.
Any funds.
I think private, like the.
Any funds.
Yeah. So, it would be. I don't know if you'd even have to send that to Ways and Means. I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No, I think it would be well to move it through both houses.
Are you satisfied with that answer, Senator Gordley? Or?
I'm satisfied for now. I just don't want it to get lost.
Yeah. Okay.
And Senator Gordley, I was wondering as I was thinking about this, we haven't talked about, we talked a lot about our own TSPC and the cultural aspect of it. What does national certification, do they address that at all in order to be nationally certified?
Does whom? I'm not sure that I understand.
Well, the hearings that we heard last mm-hmm. Tuesday about what we would like to have our TSPC include. What about if you become nationally certified, are you required to have that type of...
The subject of national certification and those requirements did not come up at our hearing on the Senate Bill 782, which is the TSPC mm-hmm. cultural competency bill, but you can look forward to hearing that discussion at our next hearing, and I would expect work session on the bill.
Good. Well, I think that would be extremely important if, you know, at least the perception is out there, you know, the national certification is better than most states have. In fact, it's the very best, and I would argue that it's not if it doesn't include mm-hmm. what you want to do.
The person that we should, or one of the organizations we could direct that inquiry to would be the Northwest Regional Educational Laboratory, and to Ms. Harris, who, as you recall, testified before our committee the other night, and she's also been of great assistance as a consultant on our past charter schools legislation,
right.
And she's someone that I look to as an expert, someone who can answer the question.
Yeah, that'd be an excellent place to start, and I would hope that she would talk to the Ford Family Foundation, because they have put some money into the foundation or the opportunity, and they no doubt do have strong opinions on it too.
Are we in work session?
Yes, we are in work session.
Madam Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 324 to the floor of the Senate with a do pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Deckert has moved Senate Bill 324 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any objections? Okay. So adopted. And Senator Deckert, would you like to carry the bill on the floor? All right. We will now go into a public hearing on Senate Bill 645. We'll open the public hearing and see if we have signed up Bobby Lee.
Vicki Fleming
and Bill Lesh. I don't know if the three of you want to come up together and this is a bill that actually I am the chief sponsor on, colleagues.
I thought it looked familiar.
And it does look very familiar. And yes, I am prepared. I know I don't sound like it. And this is a bill that would allow for the Department of Education to work with our school districts to create some surveys of our high school students. Actually, it would go from grades 8 through 12, asking them about their career interests, their areas of interest, and trying to get some good data for our state as we start to roll out CAM and look more to all of the different efforts underway under workforce development, and supporters of those efforts are very interested and supportive of us getting better information about the interests of today's students. And so this actually all was born out of a survey that we did in Lane County of Lane County students, and out of the information we got from that survey, it generated a lot of excitement about understanding better what students are looking at today. And we took that to the Department of Education, and they saw the value in it and are supportive of this. And so today wanted to just kind of make a presentation about what we did learn through that survey and the value that we see of trying to implement this statewide. And so, Bobby, I guess you're going to do a presentation here for us.
A real brief one.
Okay. Could you start by introducing yourself?
You bet. For the record, my name is Bobby Lee. I work for Work Systems, Inc., and that's a quasi-public workforce development agency for the Portland region. And prior to that position, I served as the director of the Lane Business Education Compact. Senator Susan Castillo served as a board member. We started this project, and I'll just give you a brief overview about this project, and then we have some testimonies as well. The Business Education Compact is a connecting agency. What our job, our mission, is focused on how to bring different stakeholders together to work on a system of workforce development activities in the region. We have, of course, public schools, we have Economic Development Department, we have the Employment Department, we have workforce agencies and chambers, private industry leaders. Certainly there are education institutions such as community colleges and higher education. And all these different stakeholders are involved with helping our youth better understand the world of work. But sometimes there are challenges in terms of coordination, and so connecting agencies like the Business Education Compact was emerged, and especially with other reasons that we'll talk about in a second. Our job essentially is to create a sustainable relationship between these agencies and look for opportunities for workforce development projects. The Compact's job is essentially to facilitate that discussion and identify projects that is beneficial to the community as well as to different stakeholders that are involved. The Business Education Compact, along with Lane Workforce Partnership, which is a designated workforce agency for Region 5, sponsored this survey. And basically, there are several different reasons why we decided to sponsor this survey. One is CAM. The Education Reform Act has been introduced in the early 90s. Now the last leg of it, which is CAM, Certificate of Advanced Mastery, is being implemented and actualized. And as the public school system is working very hard to implement CAM, one of the things that we were missing is numbers. We can't quantify and qualify what's happening in the education system that can link to the community stakeholders. And so we felt that this information would be pertinent to that effort. Second reason why is because of federal legislation called Workforce Investment Act, and that's the legislation that ties in federal workforce dollars. And the way the Workforce Investment Act is designed is to work with the community to design school-to-career opportunities. And so we noticed that was happening on a national level, so we wanted to merge or join our efforts in implementing WIA as well as the Education Reform Act from the state level. The third reason is really about private industries. In order to recruit private industries, we need to know what we're talking about in terms of how many kids are interested in which field. And without that information, it was difficult to approach, for example, the automotive industry or the high-tech industry or the nursing association or the human resource association and explain to them what kind of programs we need and what kind of demand is out there. The fourth is really about baseline data and performance measurement. Without having some data to work with, it's difficult to know what kind of impact school systems are making towards their customers, which are students. And it's difficult for the community to understand what kind of impact we're making when we're designing programs. And so having some sort of baseline data prior to year 2004, we felt was a good strategic decision locally so that we can actually look at what kind of impact we're making down the road. We don't have a centralized system for managing school-to-work activities or individualized career plans. Each schools are designing their own. We have some systems in place, but they're often disconnected from the rest of the region. And we just thought it would be a better way to approach this. It's much more cost-effective to have one organization collect that kind of information and design them in a way that helps different stakeholders. So in Lane County, a couple years ago, we collected about 10,000 surveys. There are about 15,300 high school students in Lane County. We have an undercount of about 38%, which is not bad for the first year. But basically, we asked five different main basic questions. One is about their career choices. Another one is about their educational goals, school-to-career type of activities, their work and volunteering experience, and their occupational goals. And here are some of the results that I'll just kind of highlight for you here today. One is that arts and communication is extremely popular. Natural resources is not. We have both rural and urban high schools in Lane County. They're all together 23 high schools and 16 school districts. So this is a pretty diverse group of students. And you can kind of tell what young people are thinking about through this data. 91% of engineering and industrial systems are males. And so we also see a gender issue. And you can break this data down also by race, class, gender, so a variety of different demographic indicators is something that you can also look at as well. We won't be able to get into that today. 74% of health services are females. You can also break this data down by class, different grade levels. And what you'll be able to see is that there's really not a whole lot of difference between different grade level in terms of their interest in different career pathways. The only outlier that I've identified was that African-American students tend to lean towards business and management rather than arts and communication. But besides that, basically, young people are, throughout different grade level, thinking of the same thing.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Mr. Lee, in the survey,
yes.
Going back to those couple of slides,
you bet.
What was the percentage of students who selected education or teaching?
We'll get into that actually in two slides down.
Okay.
Would that be okay if I?
That's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Actually, this is the slide. basically, these are the top 10 occupational choices that we were able to identify. There's about 40 of them they had to pick from, and number one is fine arts. In fact, the least popular occupational choice, which is the good news for me, is public administration. And so there'll be lack of competition, which means I'm in good shape. So you can tell education is number four. And the really interesting thing about this information is the fact that as we're debating teacher shortage, for example, or nursing shortages, or high-tech workers who we can't find, well, it's right here. We know who they are. In the past, we just haven't figured out how to communicate with that population because we didn't keep any information. If you look at their educational goals, over 90% of them are going into higher education or some level of higher education, whether it's professional technical programs or traditional four-year colleges or graduate school. And female students tend to have higher aspirations generally than male students.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Bobby, maybe you mentioned it, but what were the demographics on this in terms of minorities and socioeconomic level and so forth?
Yes, I have a much more detailed report that I can forward to you that breaks this information down into much more specific level. Did you want me to incorporate that right now?
No.
Okay.
I think it'd be useful to the committee.
Absolutely. What I can forward is all the details for you to look
at. What do you mean forward it? Printed material? Or you can do it on there?
I can't do it in here right now, but I do have a report with me that I can give you that would have that information.
Sure, that'd be fine.
Okay. This is also school to career activities, and this is very important when you design CAM. And I'm going to put this up here just a little bit longer because this graph is difficult to read. The red basically represents an area that none of the high school students during K through high school have never participated in an internship of any kind. And so the red indicates areas where our students are not participating in any type of internships or school-to-career activities or what is now called career-related learning activities. And this caused some grief to the stakeholders that are involved because with CAM, you have to do those activities in order to graduate. But again, this gives us at least some information to work with when you design programs. This is the last slide. I kept it really short. Basically, it had multiple effects. One is that young people are better understanding the world of work, and they know how to actualize their plans, in part because through this survey, they receive an individualized career plan. In fact, there's a copy that I've forwarded with an individualized career plan as a result of the survey. Then we compared that information with Employment Division's data around occupational growth areas. And so we do a comparison analysis between what kind of aspirations young people have at this point in time, and then compared to what kind of occupations are actually out there in the market. Also, other effects include public awareness and to some level, some commitment from the public to help our young people better understand their career choices. So the public certainly was involved, and they have a better sense of what's going on. And then private industry leaders are now saying, oh, I get it now. You have 626 kids who are interested in going into my field. If that is the demand, and if we know who they are, then why don't we design programs during the summertime? So it leads into that kind of discussion once they understand what young people are thinking. So private industry leaders have been very pleased that we have this kind of information. And then, of course, higher education. Education institutions outside of K-12 are wanting to know what's going on with young people, what they're thinking in terms of their educational aspirations. So professional technical programs, prep tech type of programs, higher education in general are looking at this information saying, oh, I get it now. These kids are thinking about coming to this program. And it allows schools and higher education to look at how to manage their resources. This information allows all the stakeholders to talk about what is going on and be able to quantify the information, unlike before. In the past, we just assumed what young people were thinking and designed programs based on our assumptions. But this allows us to really understand what young people's aspirations are, and so it makes our planning effort a little more tangible and a little more realistic, and we can use that information to manage resources. So I'll end my presentation there, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer. We do have other testimonies also that are going to be speaking here today.
Any questions for Bobby, or otherwise we'll bring up the other witnesses, Vicki Fleming and Bill Lesh.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Deckard.
Before we lose Bobby, I just want to tell one other service that he's provided to Oregon. When we were in college, Bobby was student body president at U of O, and a good friend of mine, and he drove me around. I didn't have a car, so Bobby would drive
me
around.
You weren't old enough to get a license.
Well, I was old enough. And Bobby would graciously drive me around campus, and so I thank him again for that service.
That's a great.
And one other thing, Madam Chair, is while Bobby was student body president, the University of Oregon had the highest number of students in the nation as a percentage of their population registered to vote and voted in the 92 election than any institution in America under his leadership.
Thank you,
Senator. What was the percentage of the students that were registered to vote at University of Oregon?
Slightly over 60%.
Were registered 70s. To vote?
That's correct.
And voted.
And voted. Oh, that's amazing.
We were highest in the nation. That's correct.
Amazing. Good.
And Senator Decker was a state affairs coordinator, so he handled all the legislative activities as a lobbyist on behalf of the students.
Now we know what the problem is.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Bobby Lee for governor.
There we go.
Thank you.
There you go. Yeah.
So you met him.
Good afternoon, Senator Castillo, members of the committee. My name is Vicki Fleming, and I'm the Regional Coordinator for Professional Technical Education in Region 3, which is Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties, and I'm housed at Chemeketa Community College, and our consortium works with 32 high schools in 21 school districts, two education service districts, and Chemeketa in a partnership to advance what will soon be the Certificate of Advanced Mastery and professional technical programs in general. So we were very excited. Mr. Lesh and I are both regional coordinators, and Ron Dexter from the Department of Education presented this compact survey to our group several months ago, and we were all very intrigued by the notion and obviously see it as an extremely useful tool. And my comments will be brief. I just want to make this real for you by telling you about another project that we're working on in Polk County. which is another small consortium of five school districts who have come together to build a technical skills training center by renovating one of the shop facilities at Dallas High School. So students from five districts can attend courses at that technical skills center, and as well they can attend programs in each other's high schools. These districts did this partnership acknowledging that they would not be able to afford to provide all six of the Certificate of Advanced Mastery endorsement areas because of cost prohibitions. So they figured out a way to work together. When we started into that project 3 years ago, we basically decided that we needed to ask the kids whether or not the students whether or not they would actually participate if we had the capacity to send them back and forth between high schools. So we did lots of focus groups and questioning of students about how that would feel to them to be taken out of their home high school into their a neighboring high school, which they compete with athletically, and you know, all those community values that come along with that kind of a system. They said to us, indeed we would. If you provide quality instruction in an area that we're interested in, we would be very happy to get on a bus and go somewhere else to get that information. So then we began building programs in that consortium based on what really currently existed in all the high schools in terms of their expertise. So one of the districts had a very excellent business and management program. The other had an excellent microelectronics program. What we didn't factor in, what was really not a huge factor, a piece of information in that consideration, is really labor market. Now, not many high school principals factor labor market and economic development concerns into their decision making. They're starting to in that consortium now because there's a clear understanding that there's a huge connection between economic workforce development and education. So that the programs are now beginning to be designed and prioritized around, indeed, what students want and what the labor market will provide for them in terms of opportunity. That's a huge leap in the education universe for us to be able to really start finding out what students want and building programs based on that and the local labor market. I wanted to just point out one piece of research that I came across in preparing for this testimony, and that is some information from the National Center for Education Statistics, and they did a cohort study over a 10-year period about what participation rates in which vocational programs had really sustained themselves over time. And in fact, the last sentence in the conclusion of this document is that the findings suggest that changes in vocational course taking may at least in part reflect responses to labor market trends. So yes, indeed, students do vote with their feet, and it's up to us to figure out how to make the connections in building quality programs. And this survey would be an instrumental tool in helping us be able to do that adequately. So we definitely in our region would support the passage of this legislation, and in fact would conduct the survey with as many high schools as would be willing to participate.
Any questions?
Yeah, Madam Chairman.
Yes, Senator Arden.
You know, that is really good news to hear you say what you said. I just saw a report on Benson High School in the Portland Public School System where the dropout at the high schools can be anywhere from, you know, 15% to 30%, like at my alma mater, Jefferson High School. But at Benson, I think, what was it, 2%, because of the vocational technical offerings, and gee, I really hope we can build on what I hear you saying.
We hope so too. I that's a huge solution to the dropout problem that
yes.
We all acknowledge, and I think one of the unintended consequences of the move to higher academic content is that some of the resources that may have previously been devoted or energies that may have been devoted to sustaining those professional technical programs have been jeopardized. We've lost some of those programs in our region. So it's really up to us to get good information and to retrofit our high schools in a way that really does keep that in the focus of the programs we offer.
Good, thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon. I'm Bill Lesh, Regional Coordinator for the Mount Hood Regional Education Consortium. And just to give you an idea, that geography is from I-205 east to Cascade Locks is the region that I serve. I want to speak from the employer point of view about this whole notion. As you probably have read, we are doing more and more immigrating of workers from outside Oregon to fill our quality workforce needs. And this is especially true in the area of electronics manufacturing and engineering. Those aren't all the dilemma areas, but they're the ones that are fairly crucial and people paying a great deal of attention to that. And we're trying very hard to try to connect those education pathways, as you've seen in the slides that Bobby was sharing earlier. But what we found is we're actually educating fewer engineers as the demand for them increases. So we don't seem to be able to make a connection between what that workplace needs and what is coming out of our education systems. And part of that is students can't choose what they don't know. And we think that we need to get them to know some things in order for them to consider them as viable choices. It, to me, is very disturbing to see a predominantly male group of students in engineering when there are equally qualified females who don't get to know what engineering is to make it a choice. And that could be a whole other bit of testimony from me today, which I don't necessarily want to go into, but it's a sincere dilemma that we need to deal with. In addition to that, we have a number of market demands that are not being responded to in a systematic, intentional planning way. We tend to show kids what we already have and hope they like it, instead of looking at what our state workforce needs, creating programs that help build that workforce, and then having a solid gap covered in that, and having a higher percent of students do exactly what Senator Hartong was talking about, which is choose to go on to post-secondary experiences that have family wage employment. And that, to me, is a big piece of why we're having difficulty in our economy, is that so many of our young people are coming out and settling for those minimum wage opportunities for a large number of years. And that is not economic productivity. In addition to that, we need to be looking at long-term solutions, not just necessarily short-term band-aids to solve a particular problem at a moment in time. We need to be doing some investments, and the retrofitting of our high schools is one good example of that. And looking at education in a different way at grades 11 and 12 that's much more solidly connected to what the workplace is about in the 21st century. And then if we accidentally cure the boredom of our young people in grades 11 and 12 simultaneous to that, maybe we have our dropout problem addressed in a more significant way also. And I guess I'd like to just finish with saying that when I travel and I see people looking at the Grown in Oregon label on a lot of our products, there's a lot of pride there, but we don't have a Grown in Oregon label on our workers because only a portion of our workers are grown here in Oregon. So we need to be taking a look at that. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
You know, I guess part of my concern in some of these things is, as you add time by years to degrees, it seems to me there's would certainly be a tendency by people to say, well, I'll pick off this job that I can do in 2 years rather than having to go out there and wait for 6-7 years to do it. I think right now, apparently, from what I understand, our School of Pharmacy has added another year, basically, to the pharmaceutical course or the pharmacy course. I've just been thinking about that in light of if I had been going there and all of a sudden found out that during the time that I was in the process of deciding I wanted to do this, somebody just threw another 365 days on me. That's a serious commitment to make in order to advance, when in reality, if you can get some of these other jobs, and we saw that in the timber industry for years, where the kids would go out and they could make more than a college-educated person right out of high school. I have one friend that went from high school the next day. He graduated on a Sunday and he went to work for Roseburg Forest Products on Monday, and he's working there to this day. And he's been one of the more fortunate ones in that his job has stayed, and he's almost retirement age now. But he never had to go to college in order to bring home enough bacon that he could run and have a pretty good deal for his family. And I'm just wondering how many people now were inadvertently scaring out by
extending and making it more difficult just from a time standpoint alone to get a degree. Not that we don't need that time to prepare for those degrees, because things just are more complicated, and the amount of things that needed to be learned today are manifold more than what they were before.
I think the solution that we're looking at in our region, and I know Vicki can speak for this in her region also, is giving students an opportunity for post-secondary programming while they're still in the 11th and 12th grade. Yeah. And then they get a leg up on that duration of time, whether they're planning to go to finish a two-year, a four-year, or a six-year program. They have a chance to explore what it means, have some value on a transcript, and they haven't spent a whole lot of money in terms of tuition costs by doing those kind of vehicles that were developed in our regions. And those participations in our region last year, we had close to 1,100 students who took college-level coursework before they finished their high school diploma. And that was a savings, if it was in higher ed dollars, of about $1.6 million of students offset tuition costs while they were still in high school. That's the retrofitting and the changing of the what we're doing in high school that we're talking about, to change the approach of what we're doing with these young people. It needs to be examined in a way that engages students in some things that they consider to have meaning, and they have a future to them. And we believe we've got some pretty good ideas from the kind of program that we've developed of what works, but we need to have a more comprehensive picture across a whole lot of industry and career strands in order to make it a comprehensive approach. And both in small as well as in large urban settings, because it's a different notion in what that economic situation is in a more rural area versus what it is in Metro Portland. We have to take that in consideration as we're helping students with their career decision making too.
Madam Chair, yes, we should have had him here last Tuesday.
What did I miss?
Well, we're getting just at least some slight resistance from some of the high schools that are having to share some of these programs, or afraid they're going to have to share in the programs from the money standpoint. And somehow or another, we've got to get together. And I think you're right on, because I'll tell you what a difference it made in school when you finally got actually to do something in your major field after you'd spent about 2 years in college, you know, and you finally, the 2 years, you got to do something that was germane to what you were hoping to eventually do. And it made school a lot easier and a lot more interesting. And so obviously, and I think back on some of the ways teachers approach things. I remember in taking Spanish, how long it took me to learn to actually write a sentence or something like that. And then I went into college and took Greek in the first class period. We actually learned enough of the alphabet and had a simple sentence that we could write, and we left there challenged already to go out knowing some Greek. And it just put a whole different slant on things. You didn't have to learn 750 vocab words before you could start writing a sentence. And so I think, you know, giving these kids a chance to actually get some hands-on and seeing what they're doing is certainly a way to do it. But somehow or another, we've got to break the mold that we've got to go X amount of years in this and X amount of things here, and that this thing is a separate entity of its own, and this is a separate entity. And so I hope that we'll continue in those efforts, and appreciate your testimony very much, and how it's, and hope that it continues to work that way for the students' benefit.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much. This is an excellent proposal that we have before us, matched by the testimony that we've heard from our three panelists. And I would ask if the panelists would also be willing to take a look at another bill that's making its way through our process, and that's Senate Bill 783, which is now known as the Expanded Options for Students, and give us some feedback, my office in particular, as sponsors of that bill, and tell us how you see that particular policy matching up with the conversation that we're having here. But again, your testimony is excellent, and thank you very much for being here.
Bobby, did you want to add something?
There are several legislation. This is a House Bill 3755 that also ties in with this bill. In fact, Representative Karen Menes is the sponsor of that bill, along with Representative Shetterly. And in fact, it's referenced in the bill, in their bill, 3755, which these two folks have been instrumental in helping with Senate Bill 645, because you need data in order to build programs. And so Representative Menes even was able to, as part of the language, change it in a way that also accommodates this bill. So I just want to give you a heads up. So there are several bills that this bill will tie in very nicely with. I'll be sure to do some research on Senate Bill 783.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ron Dexter is here from the Department of Education. And Ron, I wanted to give you an opportunity. I've been working with you folks on this and just wanted to give my fellow committee members a chance to hear the Department of Education's perspective on this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ron Dexter, Associate Superintendent, Office of Professional Technical Education at the Oregon Department of Education. Let's see, I'd like to say, first of all, I'd like to thank Bobby Lee for his work in Lane County. And when I, as Vicki said, when I took this work forward to the regional coordinators and professional technical deans from the community colleges, they were very excited about it. And they said, can we hand this out? And I said, well, I need to check with Bobby to see. And some did administer the survey this year. So I want to say I was very excited about the work that was done in Lane County. And I want to thank Senator Castillo for her vision and leadership to put this into a bill and propose that it be administered on a statewide basis. I'm pleased to hear the conversation that was presented in the testimony on the issue of dropouts. I think too often professional technical education is left out of the conversation as a solution, when we all know that when you create a meaningful, relevant educational experience for high school kids where they feel connected, they're not going to drop out of high school. We have 12,000 high school students involved in student leadership at organizations like FFA and DECA and HOSA and so forth. And I don't have data to, I'm in the process of collecting some information, but Friday night I spoke to 1,200 FFA students at Oregon State University in a statewide FFA convention, and I talked about the 10,660 dropouts that drop out of Oregon high school students. I said, imagine 9 auditoriums filled like this one is, and that's the number of students that drop out of our high schools every year. And I also said, told those students, you made the right choice, and I'm sure your parents feel that you made the right choice. And my hunch is that very few, if any, students and student leadership organizations drop out of high school. And my hunch would be that it's probably less than 1%, especially if students are in the organizations more than 1 year. In terms of the questions about connecting this legislation to Senate Bill 783, and also the, I'm not sure, what is the other House, what is it?
3755.
Some of you know I've been involved in that legislation for 6 years, so and I'm very pleased to see that legislation moving forward, because many regions in Oregon now are moving towards collaborative models of sharing with each other in the community colleges as for cost efficiency and also high program quality for students. I've told you this before, but I'll tell you again. When I was at the Saban Skill Center, we doubled the enrollment from 1,000 to 2,000 students, all because we had support from the legislature and support from business and industry. Kids chose to leave their home high school and come to that regional center from not only North Clackamas, but also Westland, Gladstone, and Oregon City. So the model at Saban is over 30 years old, and so it's not a new model. It's a model that's been tried and tested, and the investment that the legislature made at the Saban Skill Center is one now that I'm hoping that there's some vision there in terms of this is one of the strategies that works successfully to help keep kids in school and prepare them successfully for their next steps. And we could spend hours bringing students in from those centers to testify, and they will all tell you, or many will tell you, that that experience has been on a scale of 1 to 10. They'll tell you they use, some have used the term 11 plus for them. And these are all students. These are not students that are just planning to go to work directly out of high school. 70% of the students at Saban went on to post-secondary institutions, and there were 200 special needs students enrolled at Saban. So it is a model that is for all students. I do believe that this legislation is much more, it has the potential to be much more than just gathering information about what kids want to do. I believe it has the potential to, as Vicki said, to restructure the high school in terms of what students are, it brings attention to the data that, which we currently really are not doing a very good job of, I think, in high schools in terms of where kids want to go. And as Bill said, too often we give students a menu of classes that we choose to offer at the high school based upon our staffing and what teachers can teach, and not often enough where it's tailored around the individual needs of students. So I do believe that it has the potential to help restructure the high school, and I think that's where Senate Bill 783 fits in. That's another innovative bill to create more options for students that currently don't exist. I think it also has the potential to build more partnerships with business and industry than currently exists, and also more partnerships with post-secondary institutions. Let's see, those are kind of my comments about, I think, where I think this bill can lead. There are some costs involved. In looking, I believe, at Bobby Lee's data, I believe he showed that, I believe the cost was around, he estimated around 300,000, I think it was, to
200,000,
and I believe that was for 1 year.
It was for, is that 1 year? Yeah, it was for 1 year, grades 8 through 12.
Right. We are estimating, just so I'm not sure, I think you're interested in this information in terms of what the anticipated costs would be to administer the survey. My staff has done some background work. In 0103, it would, we're estimating cost to be around $431,000 to contract the survey, to develop the survey, to contract it, and also to administer it. And in the 0305 biennium, the cost would be about $467,000. And what that would include is personnel costs of about a half-time educational specialist at the department, a 0.33 research, or a 0.5 the first year research analyst, and then some administrative secretarial support for another half-time. So it's 1.5 FTE the first biennium, and then we've decreased at the second biennium to 1 FTE, breaking it up into 0.33 three times for three staff, part-time staff. So those are some costs that we are currently have penciled out for you.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, Ron. I'd like to get you and Bobby together on that, because I think we could really bring the cost down for that. I know when we did it in Lane County, it was just very inexpensive to do.
Good.
And I also know that, you know, as you know, money is very, very tight.
Yes.
And I am still working with a number of folks in the building on a creative solution for cobbling funding together. And part of it involves, working with Representative Minnis in her bill, House Bill 3755, which is seeking to get some economic development dollars for the centers that she wants to create. And seeing this survey fit in with those efforts, and perhaps there would be some funding through there, working with the Oregon Business Council folks who have expressed an interest in it, and they're trying to help me find some funding for it as well. So I know it's going to take a lot of creativity to bring the funding pieces together on this, and I'm hoping that we can accomplish it. But I know it, you know, we all know we're in a very, very difficult budget time, so it's going to take creativity to make it happen, and we'll see if it does. But Thank you. I appreciate your comments. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Dexter?
Madam Chair, I think this would be more in line of a comment than a question, but also very appreciative of the comments you just made about finding some creative ways to get this done, and I believe that we can do that as well. And I'm wondering if what thought has been given to having this type of survey be done through one of our institutions of one of our higher ed institutions, U of O or PSU, OSU. It seems that there's a built-in resource there that we might draw on. And then my other comment, Madam Chair, was just recalling that Representative Jackie Winters is either on a plane on her way to D.C. or actually sitting in the Oval Office, perhaps, talking to President Bush, and she was going to be carrying an educational agenda. We need to make sure that this is on her agenda since she has that kind of entree together with our good colleague to my right, Senator Hartung. The funds are out there. I believe that. The resources out there, and we need to do this.
Thank you.
Senator Gorley, Madam Chair, let me say that we have invited Cheryl Buell from Career Information Systems to meet with Senator Castillo, and she's housed at the University of Oregon. So we are exploring cost-effective ways to do this with systems that exist already that are doing a good job that that could be included in their work at a nominal cost.
That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't think we have anybody else signed up to testify. I don't know if there was anybody else who wanted to comment on the bill. We do have an amendment because we do realize that we want to make this an optional program for districts and not a mandate that would take place for both the for our districts in the state. And so we did, we have an amendment, the Dash 2 amendments, which propose a number of changes and still directs the Department of Education to contract for the survey development and to get the survey to happen. But it does leave the participation to do this as an option for school districts. And we see it as hopefully a survey that would take place for 5 years in a row eventually. And we had earlier estimates of it costing, as we said, about $200,000 for the first year of the program and seeing costs go down after that as we just get it off the ground. But anyway, so those are in the Dash 2 amendments here. And let's see.
We have to be attached to the SMS.
Ah, here it is. Okay. Are there any questions about the amendments at all? I'd like to entertain a motion to move the amendment.
I move the amendments, the Dash 2 amendments, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Farioli moves the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 645. I guess we need to go into a work session, don't we? We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 645 and open up a work session.
I move the Dash 2 amendments, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Farioli moves the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 645. Are there any questions? So amended?
Madam Chairman, I'd like to move the bill to the floor as amended with a due pass.
I think it has to go to Ways and Means.
I'd like to move the bill to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you. Chairman. I'd love to send it to the floor, too, believe me. Thank you. Senator Farioli moves Senate Bill 645 as amended to Ways and Means. Do we want to have a due pass recommendation on this?
With a due pass recommendation, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Any comments? So moved. Thank you. And that closes the work session on Senate Bill 645. Say a little prayer for the funding part of it. Okay, we'll go into a public hearing on Senate Bill 726. And colleagues, this is also a bill that I am sponsoring this session. And actually, this proposes a pilot project in our state to help with our dropout prevention efforts. It actually came to me from some folks in the Eugene area who were involved in our dispute resolution commission projects, working in mediation efforts with our schools, and see a value in using those centers as creating partnerships with our schools around the state to try and help kids who are dealing with suspensions and headed for dropouts. So we have folks here who can talk about the bill and explain how they see the program working here. Kay Kamiya is here, and Nancy Gilbertson, and Patty Williams is here. Would you please step forward?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Kay Kamiya, and I am the Executive Director at Community Mediation Services in Lane County, and I'm here in support of Senate Bill 726. This bill, like Senator Castile said, is a pilot project in Oregon that provides mediation services to school for reducing suspension and expulsion rates. In light of the recent school shootings across the nation, the need for a creative solution to this is imminent. Safety is a huge issue. Senate Bill 726 is designed to create a safer school by supporting an in-school framework for conflict resolution. Let me touch on a couple benefits. Mediation can effectively prevent chronic cases from escalating to crisis level and fostering safe schools. An evaluation of our Lane County Restorative Justice Mediation Program shows an 80% reduction in recidivism, a statistic that is reflected nationwide. I've personally worked with teen offenders who mediated with their victims and made restitution. I've seen time and time again how a mediation process can steer a youth into a more positive direction. This pilot project would apply a similar restorative justice model to pre-police conflicts in schools. Secondly, we want to keep youth in our schools. When schools lose students, everybody loses. Schools lose money. Students lose out on an education, and the community loses by having more high-risk youth in the community. A key goal for in-school mediation is to reduce suspensions, expulsions, and dropout rates. In Colorado's Westminster School District, a program like this pilot was implemented about 3 years ago. What they found was they decreased suspensions by 25%, while Denver school districts, which are nearby, actually increased by 24%. They also found that in several of the Westminster schools, they had no expulsions after the second year. So this bill gives Oregon a chance to reap these same benefits. In closing, let me tell you about a young man I've recently met. For about 3 years, he's been in a Eugene school, and he's been discriminated against, and he mostly for his perceived Latino ethnicity. He has been spit on, beat up, dragged. He was lassoed and dragged down the hallway one day. And the schools weren't helping much, and he was actually at risk for dropping out. Eventually, two of the boys who had, you know, been involved in that were charged with a misdemeanor crime, which is how his case came to my attention. And so this bill would help prevent the sort of escalation that this young man experienced, and it would allow delinquent students to learn more about the consequences of their actions and being held accountable in meaningful ways where the harm can be mended. And ultimately, the bill keeps students in school to learn, even if it's learning about themselves, and it keeps schools safe. Thank you for your time today and your willingness to listen, and I urge you to support Senate Bill 726. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nancy Gilbertson, and I'm the Executive Director of the Community Dispute Resolution Program in Deschutes, Jefferson, and Crook Counties. Those are over on the east side of the mountains. I'm representing the Central Oregon region, one of the four areas that may be chosen or will be chosen if this pilot project does actually go through. I'm here today in full support of Senate Bill 726, a bill that, if passed, would provide schools and our youth with the tools to create a more peaceful and safe learning environment, a more peaceful and safe Oregon. Specifically, this bill will create the learning environment that we owe the future of Oregon, our own future, the future of our schools, and the future of our youth. Senate Bill 726 will encourage students, schools, and communities to rely on a conflict resolution process to help maintain community integrity and school safety throughout Oregon. The Community Dispute Resolution Program and our community partners and coalition partners in Central Oregon, that being the Deschutes County Community Justice Program, the Kids Belong in Schools Program, the City of Bend Police Department, and several other organizations that we consider coalition members and those that support youth are also in support of this bill. We support Senate Bill 726 because we feel that it will provide avenues to investigate the actual behavior that leads to school suspensions and expulsions. While suspension certainly indicates that behavior is inappropriate and unacceptable, the suspension does not provide an avenue to resolve the issues that led up to that behavior. We also support Senate Bill 726 because it will teach students and entire school communities about conflict resolution techniques that work and that have a lasting effect. One of the schools in New Mexico that's actually using this kind of technique with their suspension cases and issues has seen the lasting effects of using mediation, and that the students hardly ever return to the school administrators for discipline issues. So it really ends up having a lasting effect. The students learn about how to use conflict resolution for other issues around in their school. And the third point is that we support Senate Bill 726 because we feel that it will create the kind of learning environment that we owe our schools, our teachers, and our youth. By encouraging a safe school environment and learning environment, students are able to learn free of the distraction of behavioral issues, violence, and fear that are so prevalent in our society and in our schools. There are countless benefits to this bill, and I hope that I've illustrated just a couple of those benefits and the kind of lasting impact that your support of this bill will have. I would like to thank the committee for the opportunity to testify here today. In closing, let me just restate that Central Oregon, and in fact the whole state of Oregon, would benefit greatly with the passage of this bill. With the passage of this bill, behavior issues would be reduced, schools would learn about conflict resolution techniques that actually last, and our youth and our schools will benefit greatly. The Community Dispute Resolution Program and our community partners in the Central Oregon region encourage you to support this important bill. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patty Williams, and I am the director of the Hillsborough Mediation Program, which is a community policing program of the Hillsborough Police Department. I developed and have directed the Hillsborough Mediation Program since 1996. I am here also in support of Senate Bill 726. I am representing the city of Hillsborough, which is one of four cities selected to participate in this proposed program. The Hillsborough Mediation Program is very much in support of Senate Bill 726 and the goals it has set to address and reduce high school suspensions, expulsions, and dropouts with an alternative approach using mediation, and in doing so, educating high school youth and staff and fostering a safer school environment. The reasons that the Hillsborough Mediation Program feels this bill justifies your support are, one, to promote a different and more effective way of dealing with high school suspensions that would lead to greater understanding of the students and faculty involved in those suspensions by more effectively dealing with the reasons for them and the outcomes from them. Two, to promote a stronger collaboration between the high school students, faculty, and the police department's Hillsborough Mediation Program that would coordinate this program in this city. And three, to promote skill development in Hillsborough's youth to help them deal with conflict in an effective manner, therefore keeping them in school, diverting them from the criminal justice system, and developing them into better citizens for our community. As a representative of the Hillsborough Police Department and the Hillsborough Mediation Program, I present perspectives not only from a mediation standpoint, but also from a police department view. The Hillsborough Police Department has for many years been looking into a more effective way to deal with school suspensions and diverting youth away from the criminal justice system. The passing of Senate Bill 726 would give us the opportunity to put into practice an alternative way using mediation as its basis of focusing on these issues. Currently, the Hillsborough Mediation Program has an effective partnership with the Hillsborough School District, offering mediation services, training, and educational resources to our schools. It would be a natural progression to expand this partnership using funding made available through Senate Bill 726 to address this topic of high school suspensions using mediation, education, and services specifically aimed at high school students and staff. I also wish to thank you for this opportunity to bring testimony here today. In closing, the Hillsborough Mediation Program and the Hillsborough Police Department has long held the belief that we can influence the lives of our community youth if we present them with the proper tools to deal with conflict in a productive manner. Senate Bill 726 would be an effective way for the city of Hillsborough to instill in high school youth, age youth, the process of using mediation to deal effectively with conflict, and for the schools to deal more effectively with suspensions, expulsions, and dropouts. I urge you also to support Senate Bill 726. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we have Susan Brody from the Oregon Dispute Resolution Commission and Merced Flores from the Department of Education.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Susan Brody. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Dispute Resolution Commission, and I'm here to speak in support of Senate Bill 726. Our state agency provides technical assistance and grants to over 30 community dispute resolution centers throughout the state in 21 different counties. And we have a strong interest in having more of those centers working in partnership with their communities and their schools to assist schools in having safe school environments. We see this bill as a very good start and as being providing an opportunity for these four centers to test some new models, specifically of providing conflict resolution services in suspension and expulsion cases. We then think the learnings from this pilot will be very, very helpful to other community programs throughout the state who may also want to implement similar programs. We have worked this biennium with closely with the Oregon Department of Education to produce a conflict resolution program handbook that has been distributed to school districts throughout the state. This describes a community partnership model that we believe can be very effective in implementing conflict resolution programs in the schools, and we see this bill as one of the steps that can be taken to implement this model. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Merced Flores, Associate Superintendent for the Office of Student Services at the Department of Education. Senate Bill 726 directs the Dispute Resolution Commission to establish pilot projects using mediation services in public schools, and does establish four community centers and also in conjunction with school districts to find sites to put together good quality programs in school resolution dispute programs. The Department of Education does support this bill because it provides an alternative to current suspension and expulsion activities. The main premise of conflict resolution goes along with the Department of Education's thinking on dropout prevention. Currently, our agency participates in this program that we just talked about, the SCRIP program, because it is a program that is a how-to manual to develop good conflict resolution programs. I do want to say that our conflict resolution education does create several items, and it does create good environments, and also creates less physical violence. It also creates less disruptive behavior. It does improve academic performance. It does improve school safety and learning climate, and also builds leadership and social-emotional skills in our schools. We need this type of program, especially with our high dropout rate. As we all know, there's about 10,000 students that drop out of school each year. And sometimes just an intervention approach does help students, and it does help school environments deal with issues that we face on a daily basis. Sometimes these type of programs will save a young person's life. They will stay in school if we take the time to just spend with kids and also develop some type of mediation process. So when we talk about dropout prevention programs, it is very necessary for us to make sure that we talk about school dispute resolution programs and mediation programs as an effective way of addressing the dropout issue. Our schools are becoming very diverse every day, and as I spoke the other day about every three new students, two of the three are minorities. And if we look at our diverse communities that we're having each come into our daily lives every single day, we need to make sure that we're looking at school dispute resolution programs to help ways to help our students in order for them to stay in school and also have better lives. I'd like to encourage you to look at this program as an alternative to the dropout prevention issue, because we need programs like this to attract students and at the same time to address some of the issues that students have each day. So I strongly urge you to consider the passage and support of Senate Bill 726. Thank you.
Thank you. Merced, Senator Hartung had provided us with a copy of an article that was in the the New York Times, I believe, recently about the increasing number of Latinas who are dropping out of school and the concern about that. Could you talk about whether we're seeing that same pattern happen here in Oregon as we are seeing the statistics on a national level?
Madam Chair, that is a very, very troublesome area of young women dropping out of school. I saw the same article. And there was another article, I think, also on another website that talked about young people dropping out of school, especially Latina women. I believe that we don't have those figures in our database, but I believe that it was addressed this year to our research specialist, Bob Jones. And more we are seeing that young Latina women are leaving school, and there's very many concerns, especially because of the role models, because of the attention that is given to young Latina women. And still, in our society today, a lot of attention sometimes is given to young Latino men, but sometimes we still have the old stereotypes and the old cultural values and traditions that a woman does not have a place in education. And it's very sad that we still have those thoughts in our society. So I believe that we need to ramp up our programs to address the issues of young Latinos that need to go on to college, need to go on to post-secondary education, to make efforts for them. It's very, very serious, and I believe that we need to address those issues.
Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Again, I would just say that this is another excellent proposal that we have before us. And one of the people who comes to mind who's been doing a lot of work in this area and who I believe still works with the State Department of Education is John Linson. And, you know, I just think about all of the energy and effort he's put into this particular area over the years. We started a conversation back in 1991 around getting more mediation programs into our schools, and had some bills that didn't go anywhere around that time when I was a member of the House of Representatives. So it's good to see that we're getting back on track and that we have legislation to consider. But it's also very sad that in the intervening years we've not done as much as we could have and should have to prevent injuries and all kinds of tragic conflict and even death in our schools.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, there was a question earlier. I know Senator Hartung had mentioned something about the national certification of teachers. And another person that you might consider contacting is Dr. Ben Canada, because he is on the national board of the National Teacher Certification. And he would be able to have the information that might be able to provide you whether cultural competency is a part of that certification.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, that's one of the reasons why we're glad that Merced Flores is back with us in the State
yes.
Department of Education.
Absolutely.
He always has the right pieces of information at the right time.
Colleagues, we have with us today a Dash 1 amendment for this bill, and I'd like to just talk about it for just a second. One of the things we tried to accomplish in the amendment is we wanted to give the Department of Education some more latitude in selecting where the pilot centers would be. We name four centers in the bill, but the language is made a little bit broader to allow the department to perhaps include other districts if we can accomplish this pilot here. And then in Section 2 of the amendment, it also identifies where funding could come from for the program. In talking with the Department of Education, they have expressed support for including it as part of the dropout prevention option package that the department has. And so the amendment actually would allow for this program to happen if we get the dropout prevention option package passed. Right now, it's not a part of the co-chair's budget. It is in the governor's budget, and we're hoping that we do get that one funded. And crafted an amendment that identifies where the source of funding would go, and we will also send a letter along with the bill to the co-chairs and to Senator Hartung, helping to tie these two bills together as the bills move through the process. So. Just wanted to explain what the Dash 1 amendment was about. Any questions about it? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 726 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 726.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Are you ready for
I'm ready for
a motion.
A motion.
And I was distracted here for a moment. Is there an amendment?
The Dash 1 amendment.
Madam Chair, thank you. I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 726.
Senator Gordley has moved the Dash 1 amendments for Senate Bill 726. Are there any comments or questions? So moved.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 726 as amended to Ways and Means. With a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Gordley has moved Senate Bill 726 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any comments? So moved. Thank you, colleagues. And thank you for your testimony here today. Thanks. And hopefully we can get this done. All right. And that concludes today's business for the Senate Education Committee, and thank you all.
Good job. We ought to ship Charles out of town more often.
I won't
Kidding,
know.
Of course.